The Americans. Stand beside the Americans. If you stand with the Americans, not much can really go wrong. The Master. But quite a long time ago. On a hillside studded with umbrella pines overlooking Trastevere, the Hotel Excelsior Splendide lived up with peacocky Latin swagger to the cheerful pomposity of its name. The pruned walkways of its gardens were strewn with looted marble fragments from the age of Augustus. Its entrance hall was a half-kilometre square of mosaic marble exuberance with plush red sofas and waiting staff dressed rather more smartly than the most senior ranks of the Italian armed forces, surrounded by gilded Corinthian columns. In the bedrooms there were original artworks. Andy Warhol's prints of multicoloured dollar signs were particularly popular. Benvenuto Cellini had designed the cutlery and Paolo Veronese had done the wallpaper. Or so it appeared. Down in its bowl of dusty tourism and mafia-run shopping, the rest of Rome sometimes raised its eyes to the faraway gelato palace of the hotel and felt a spasm of jealousy. Most weeks, the Excelsior Splendide was simply there to host international business conferences. Men with high blood pressure and button-down shirts fought over the lobster buffet in the evenings and waddled down to the Imperial Roman bathing pool the next morning like so many warthogs in thongs. Air-conditioned limousines and oleaginous guides could be hired for spouses or mistresses who wished to shop or view the sights of the eternally cynical city. Around the grounds, former taxi drivers and retired policemen posed in short white smocks with plastic helmets, shields and swords. In the evenings, they engaged in listless slow-motion gladiatorial combat for the entertainment of executives on their way to dinner. It was widely believed that their meaty thighs and weather-beaten faces were available for hire later. The front desk took care of everything. But on this particular week, under the shade of the pines and behind the yew hedges, the gladiators were sulky. They were outnumbered and outshone by the magnificent carabiniere of the Tuscania Airborne Regiment. Leaner, younger men, and indeed, better armed. The gladiators, who had their pride after all, suspected the jumped-up policemen of sniggering at their skirts. If so, they kept their laughter mostly to themselves and adopted poker faces as the guests passed. For the carabiniere were on duty to protect the many dozen American and EU politicians and military top brass who had gathered to debate intelligence issues following the recent bombings. This week, it was all very serious and very grown up. The public face of the conference was naturally meaningless. There would be a televised speech by the European Security Commissioner and a short statement by the US Vice President. Nothing surprising would be said, though what was unremarkable would be said well, and truisms repeated with elegance and force. What else, after all, are the literature degrees at so many expensive universities on both sides of the Atlantic for? In the hotel's conference rooms there would be briefings about Islamist penetration of European cities, vague descriptions of outrageous surveillance strategies swaddled in a cocoon of euphemism, and an elegant talk from a self-congratulatory professor from Bologna about the history of radicalism in Pakistan and Egypt. But all the real business was conducted quietly in the hotel bedrooms or the American bar. Politicians spoke about unspoken deals, shook hands on silences, and ended the careers of people who had been warmly praised in the public sessions. And this serious business had brought to Rome two of the least well-matched Americans the current administration could have sent. Simon Cantor had risen to the vice presidency via Harvard Law School, a firm of blue-chip New York attorneys, two successful congressional races, and a spell as majority whip. Members of his family had served under Eisenhower and Bush Sr. Lean, aquiline, and disdainful, Cy Cantor had been the kind of public prosecutor tough enough to take on the mob, and elegantly rich enough to be an honorary member of the yacht clubs without going to the bother of owning a yacht. If after dressing he saw a smudge of grease on the tip of one of his loafers, his whole day would be spoiled. Out west, all of this didn't wash.
"Cy's no cowboy," the younger Bush had said. "He's the kind of guy who gets out of the shower to take a piss."
Buzz Boyd was a different kind of political animal entirely. The Boyds were haulage contractors and beef men from Wyoming. In his younger days, Buzz had narrowly avoided a jail sentence for drunk driving and had burned down his cousin's mall in a family feud before he discovered business school, football, love and Jesus in more or less that order. Not only was he a real cowboy, having played football for the University of Wyoming, or UW to its friends, but he had married a cowgirl. Buzz Boyd's lovely wife, Betty, had come to UW on a track scholarship. She and Buzz first met on Prexy's pasture on the university campus. Alcohol was involved, and Laramie bars. But soon enough, Betty's membership of the Harvest Family Church rubbed off on Buzz. A teetotaler, a proud Westerner, and soon a rising executive at Muck One Energy, Buzz cut his political teeth as an advisor to Sarah Palin before arriving in Washington as a political consultant to the Tea Party. Where Cy Cantor was tall and silver as an aspen, Buzz was squat, red, and aggressive as a prickly pear. Cy had scored his share of birdies on the blue course at Congressional Country Club. Buzz shot birds as well as birdies. Cy read French novels in French. Buzz played computer games in American. Cy Cantor looked like a politician, but Buzz Boyd of Laramie, now head of Homeland Security for the United States of America, really was one. In Rome, with his huge footballer's frame sprawled across a reproduction gilt armchair, Buzz seemed to Cy an eruption, a sweaty boil in his immaculate hotel suite. As VP, Cy had bagged the best rooms and a view that spread out towards the Vatican, with St. Peter's like a giant bald guy in the far distance. He'd have to work with Boyd over the next few days. The president had brushed aside his agonized plea to send somebody else. But Cy hadn't anticipated having Buzz crowding the foreground, actually turning up in the room.
"Mr. Boyd, how do you do that?" asked Cy. "I can't do that. What's the secret?"
"Only pissy people from out east say Mr. Boyd. I'm Buzz and not ashamed of it." "How do I do what, Mr. Vice President?"
"Sit there with a smile on your face, yet radiating absolute anger and, I don't know, contempt. The more you smile, the scarier you look. How do you do it?"
"I don't know. Natural talent, I guess. Enjoy your suite, anyway. I've got a pissy little room overlooking the car park. But I guess Rome seems in better shape than I expected."
"Well, Mr. Boyd, Buzz, this isn't really Rome, you know. This is just a hotel. All the broken-down stuff out there, all the stuff with the roof gone, that's ancient Rome. You should take some time out, give it a visit. You might surprise yourself."
"The hotel suits me fine, Mr. President. I haven't seen a whole lot of Europe, but what I have seen is enough."
"Here we go."
"No, we don't. I guess there's nothing you like more than hanging around art galleries in Paris or going to the opera to see a bunch of Italian fags. I accuse you, Mr. Vice President. I accuse you of watching polo and knowing all the names of the British royal family. How do you plead?"
Cantor whinnied, the kind of noise a thoroughbred racehorse would make if it was trying to laugh at a joke it didn't find funny. "Okay, guilty as charged. But when did it become un-American to understand old Europe?"
"When they gave up on the rest of the world, I guess. We're here to cut some quiet deals. I get it. And if the president wants us to do that, I guess he's got his reasons, and I'm fine with that. But Europe, generally, is just thousands of miles in New York, so far as I'm concerned. A whole continent of New York. And the people, soft, pacifist, work-shy, left-wing atheists who are scared of the future. It's a continent of perverts. My wife originally came from over here, and she knows. They don't make anything, they haven't got any convictions to have the courage of, and they wouldn't even if they did have. Give me the Russians, the Chinese, even the Indians any day. This place was the future once, but it isn't anymore. I say, let's get the job done and get home as fast as we can.
Cy Cantor yawned. Perhaps the head of Homeland Security was going to be amusing after all. At least he'd have a good store of anecdotes for when he got back to D.C. Very eloquent, Buzz. I don't entirely disagree, but let's remember why we're here. Europe is frankly rancid with terrorists. The French jihadis who went to Syria, the Egyptian plotters in Rome, the Pakistani Deobandis in Britain. But they've still got intelligence services over here, and we need everything they've got to give us a fighting chance of defending ourselves. Who knows what the Brits will do next? Out of the EU, nearly lost Scotland. But their next leader apparently will be one of the delegates they've sent to this conference. So, in words a Wyoming boy like you will understand, let's squeeze their balls.
Well, I never thought I'd heard some sound common sense from a Jew boy New York lawyer. We live and learn. But set my mind at rest on one subject, Cy. I can't call you Cy.
It was not a question.
What are you doing here? Me? I understand. I'm the security guy, along with the CIA. But I don't understand why the president went to all the trouble of sending you over here to size up a couple of possible future leaders of a third-rate power.
Cy is fine. And that's a fair point. My answer? He didn't put it this way exactly, but the president foresees a much closer relationship with the Brits in the years ahead. Now they're out of the EU. They've got no one to turn to but us. Corporate America is still going through a rough patch. We could do with the City of London humming Yankee Doodle a little more enthusiastically. They need to open up their socialized, out-of-date health service to U.S. companies. Plus, Fox, Google, and Netflix are just a few of our companies who would love to see the BBC broken up. And there's a lot more after that. Local government contracts, infrastructure work, offshore drilling. There's not much left of the British, Buzz. This is our moment. It'll be good for them, too. Give them a place in the world and some investment that isn't Chinese or those bastard Qataris. They just have to be led gently by the hand. As you know, we've been working with that primping show pony, their so-called master, for years. Security's the least of it. I think the president wants to see whether our British friends have really delivered the country itself. Think of this, Buzz, as final payback for the White House in 1814. Buzz was impressed. If Cy was a Europe lover, well, then America was in good hands, but still managed to look mildly contemptuous. It was, as he had said, a talent.
See you at dinner. They'll be there?
They'd better be.